So friends, we are on chapter 2. In the first chapter, we saw the different types of advances. And we also saw that advances is no doubt a source of revenue for the bank. But at the same time, the bank has to be careful and ensure that its advances are of quality. And when we talk about quality, it doesn't come only with the borrower, but it comes with the security. In case the borrower defaults, the banker would not have to suffer a loss because it has something on the basis of which it can sell it, dispose it, and recover its outstanding. And when we talk in terms of advances, the banker can actually utilize its security for recovery only and only if it has created a legal charge. And in this chapter, we are exactly going to understand what do you mean by a charge? What exactly is the meaning of charge? And after understanding what exactly we mean by a charge, we are going to understand the different types of charges. Friends, it is very important to understand the different types of charges because there are different types of properties. And when we talk about legal procedure, there are different laws that define how a charge needs to be created. Like when we talk about movable property, the types of charges that can be created on movable property are defined under Indian Contract Act, while the types of charges that can be created on immovable property are defined under the Transfer of Property Act. So we have to understand what exactly are the important provisions, the right way of creating a charge so that the assets are secured when an advance is given by the bank to its borrower. So the very first question, what is a charge? And what is the answer to this? The term charge refers to the legal right on the assets. When we say legal right, in the previous chapter, we saw the status of a banker as a secured creditor. When we talk about secured creditor, it is the first charge of a bank on the assets. And the banker will get the first charge on the assets only and only if it has a legal right on the asset. And this legal right on the asset specifically means charge that is created on the asset. A legal right on the asset that have been given by the borrower as security for the loan advance or credit facility extended by the bank is called a charge. The charge gives the bank the right, the ability to possess the asset, and when this right comes, especially when the borrower defaults in making his payment for the principal and interest, and the banker has no other remedy left except to take possession of the asset, sell the asset, and recover the outstanding loan or advance in the name of the borrower who has provided that security. So this is a basic meaning of what exactly a charge is. A charge simply means a legal right on the assets that have been given by the borrower as security for the loan advance or the credit facility that is extended by the bank. What are the different kinds of charges? When we talk about different types of charges, it includes various types of rights that are given by the law to the banker. And these different types of charges can be a lien, a pledge, a hypothecation, assignment, mortgage, sub-mortgage, first charge, second charge, pari passu charge, and floating charge. So we are going to understand the meaning of all this different types of charge which a banker generally keeps in mind while securing his assets that are provided by the borrower for the loans, advances or credit facility granted by the banker to the borrower. So let us see the first type of charge, that is a lien. A lien is simply a right to retain the asset. This asset is of the borrower. And when we talk about this asset, this is specifically in the capacity of lender till the payment is made by the borrower. When we talk about lien, this is a natural right. This does not come out of any specific agreement, which is required for the other types, some of the other types of charges that are to be created. If a loan is taken pledging fixed deposit, the customer has with the bank, then the bank usually takes the fixed deposit from the customer and stamps it with the words on lien. On lien simply means the banker has a right on that fixed deposit receipt. Since the customer has taken a loan out of it, that particular amount is on lien, means the banker will have the right to retain that particular amount of the fixed deposit before the entire proceeds of the fixed deposit are paid to the borrower. So that is, in simple words, a lien means the banker's right to retain the security in the capacity of a lender till the payment is made by the borrower. Let us understand the next type of charge, that is a pledge. Pledge means bailment of goods as security. Bailment simply means delivery of goods as security for payment of a debt or even performance of a promise. We have to note one important aspect of pledge here. The delivery is essential for creation of a pledge charge. Objective of bailment is to hold goods as security for the payment of debts or for the performance of a promise. So this basic delivery is made for creation of security for payment of debt or for performance of a promise. What are the legal aspects of a pledge? The pawner or the pledger remains the owner of the property. When we talk about the pawner or the pledger, means one who is offering security for bailment. And just because he is creating a pledge charge, that does not mean that he is no more the owner. The pawner or the pledger remains the owner of the property except to the extent of interest which rests with the pledge because of the loan borrowed from the bank. So this is a specific interest, a legal right in the property with the banker for the loan advance. However, the ownership remains with the borrower, the possession remains with the bank. Pledge is not created in respect of future goods. This has to be noted very carefully. It has to be created out of the existing goods. The goods must be specific and capable of identification. It should have specific description. Now, when we talk about the person who makes bailment of goods as a pawner or a pledger, the bank who accepts the goods for bailment is called as the pledgee. So let us understand the role of a banker as a pledgee. The banker as a pledgee has a right to retain the goods pledged for payment of goods or performance of the promise. So here the right specifically is given to the banker to retain the goods what has been pledged as a process, in a process of bailment, and this retention can be made for payment of the debt or for performance of a promise. So if we have understood the role of a banker as a pledgee, what are the rights of a banker as a pledgee? The first and foremost right of a pledgee, this is specifically when the borrower defaults in making the payment, the borrower neither pays the principal nor the interest, then what can the banker do? The banker will have a right to file a suit against the pledger for the amount due and retain the goods as a collateral security. So this is an open right to file a civil suit as well as retain the goods as collateral, or he has a right to sell the goods pledged after giving the pledgee a reasonable notice. It is not necessary that banker has to insist. The first option or the second option, it is at his discretion whether to go for option A or to go for option B. A pledge's right are not limited. This is very important to note. When we talk about a pledge's rights are not limited, it's not limited to the interest in the pledge goods only. He would have all the remedies that the owner of the goods would have against a third person for deprivation of goods or injury to them. What does this mean? This simply means if the pledgee suffers some loss due to non-disclosure of information by the pledger, then the pledger will be held responsible. Like if the goods are of an exclusive nature and because of that inherent property the banker faces a loss, then the pledger will be responsible. The title of pledger of the goods pledge is defective, and if the pledgee suffers any loss due to this fact, the pledger will be responsible. The pledgee has consented due to the inducement by fraud or misrepresentation by the pledger, then the contract is voidable at the option of pledgee. This is purely means whatever rights any person will have against third party, this also will be available to the bank as a pledgee. A banker doesn't have only the rights, it has some duties also to follow. So what are the duties of a pledgee? Number one, most important duty is to take care and return the goods on payment of the debt. Just because the borrower is keeping his goods, pledging his goods with the banker, it doesn't mean the bank can do whatever with it. Be careless in looking after it. Delay in returning the goods back to the borrower in spite of he repaying the money. So the topmost duty, the foremost duty of a banker as a pledgee is to take care and return the goods on payment of the debt, restore the goods to the pledger, or deliver the goods according to the directions of the pledger as soon as the obligation to repay the amount is discharged. The pledgee is responsible for any loss, destruction or deterioration of the goods. So the pledgee has to take care about all this, and it's not only about the goods, but if there is any increase or any accretion in the value of the goods, that also has to be returned to the pledger because he is the real owner. Banker cannot retain such accretions in the value of goods with it. So is a pledge advantageous to the banker? If yes, what are the various advantages of the pledge? The first and the foremost advantage in a pledge is the goods will be in the possession of the banker and it can be liquidated at the instant of the banker after giving a reasonable notice. Pledge stock cannot be misappropriated as it will be under the control of the banker. A second important advantage. Third important advantage, a second charge of the pledge property is not possible because here again the goods are with the banker. And loss can be claimed from the insurance company. This is a safeguard used by the banker for giving an advance. If at all any loss happens to the goods, since it is insured, it can get back the insurance claim. On pledger's insolvency, the banker is secure to the extent of the value of the goods pledged. We saw this in the first chapter. Banker will have the first charge as a secured creditor. So friends, having understood the second type of charge in this book of the lien and pledge, now let us move to the third type of charge, which is hypothecation. Hypothecation can be very, very distinctly differentiated with pledge. Because the main difference between hypothecation and pledge is, in pledge there has to be a bailment. Means, the pledgee, that is the bank, is in possession of the goods. Whereas in case of hypothecation, the borrower is in possession. So in case of hypothecation, the borrower not only continues to be the owner, but he continues to possess the goods even though an advance is given for creating such goods. Hypothecation is a charge against movable property for an amount of debt where neither ownership nor possession is passed on to the creditor. The borrower gives a letter stating that the goods are hypothecated to the banker as security for the loan granted. Now one can have an obvious question, then why should a banker go for such charge? Friends, a banker's main objective is to help the borrower. And whenever an asset is created, sometimes it becomes essential that the asset needs to be in possession of the borrower because he needs to work on it. And only when he works on it, he can earn. And only after the earnings, he can actually service the bank loan. For example, suppose a shopkeeper wants to have some ready-made garments in his shop. These garments cannot be kept in the bank's premises as a pledge, because unless the garments are kept in the borrower's premises, they cannot be sold, and only when they are sold, they can be used for servicing the bank loan. So, whenever a banker thinks about creating a charge, this particular aspect also needs to be looked into as to what type of property it is, number one, and secondly, what type of charge needs to be created on that type of asset. And based on that, the legal procedure that is required to be followed needs to be done. The borrower gives a letter stating that the goods are hypothecated to the banker. Now, this is a very, very important letter. Even though the assets are in the possession of the borrower, he undertakes various sort of responsibilities in this particular type of letter, which gives some sort of cushion of safety to the bank as a lender. What does this letter of hypothecation include? The letter of hypothecation empowers the banker to take possession of the property whenever there is a default in the repayment. The letter of hypothecation states that the property is free from encumbrances. The letter of hypothecation contains the description of the goods, their quality, their quantity, their value, etc. The letter of hypothecation provides to apply the sale proceeds of the property hypothecated towards the satisfaction of the claim. The letter of hypothecation accepts the hypothecated property as a continuing security for the balance due from time to time, and the letter of hypothecation also stipulates various other borrower responsibilities. So friends, this letter of hypothecation is very, very comprehensive. Even though these assets are with the borrower, he has to follow lots of terms and conditions to ensure that the bank's advances that are made to the borrower are safe and secure. Even then, a banker has to take certain precautions. So what are the precautions that needs to be taken by a banker? Number one, obtain a letter from the borrower that the goods hypothecated are not hypothecated to any other bank. Number two, obtain periodical statement from the borrower. Number three, make personal inspection of the hypothecated goods. Only then the banker will be assured that the goods are indeed used for the purpose it was meant for. May ask for additional stock if the goods hypothecated are depreciating or its value is going down. Place a board stating hypothecated to the bank. Generally, most of you must be looking at this. Whenever any goods are hypothecated to the bank, you will find a banker's nameplate of hypothecation, which is an indication that that particular borrower has taken finance from a bank for financing those assets, and ensure that hypothecated goods are insured against burglary, theft, fire for full value, so that even in case of such calamities happening, the banker would not suffer any loss, as it can lodge a claim for recovering that money for the loss from the insurance company. What if the goods are owned by a joint stock company? Are there any extra responsibilities on the bank as a hypothecated or the pledgee? The charge created against the goods should be registered within 30 days from such creation with the registrar of companies. Here comes a very important provision from the Companies Act 2013. So whenever you are dealing with any non individual entities which are artificial persons created out of the law. And here when we talk about company, here comes the Companies Act 2013 into the picture. You have to follow, in addition to your normal legal procedures, the procedures that are required to be followed by that particular act. And in case of a company, the Companies Act 2013 requires the charge created against goods should be registered within 30 days from such creation with the registrar of companies. The banker should obtain the personal guarantee of directors of the company if the financial position of the company is weak. So this is an extra safeguard the banker has to follow when it deals with a company as a borrower. A banker also has to follow specific guidelines issued by RBI, specifically against the risk of double financing, restrict borrowing to only one bank as far as possible, obtain written application accompanied by declaration about existing credit arrangements and undertaking that stocks will not be hypothecated to any other bank. In case of borrowings from various banks, then stocks should be segregated or demarcated in different godown shops so that while the banker goes for inspecting, it can clearly find its goods which are hypothecated in its favor. And here comes a requirement of clear-cut demarcation. So having understood a lien, a pledge, and a hypothecation, pledge and hypothecation are generally for mobile properties. Now let us understand a charge that is specifically created for any mobile property, and that charge is called as mortgage. Friends, mortgage is done specifically in case of immobile properties. We have seen pledge and hypothecation done specifically for mobile properties, whereas mortgage can be done only in case of immovable properties. In our next slides, we will also see mortgage can be of different types. And each type has its own pros and cons. And based on that, every bank has its own policy to decide as to what type of mortgage that is preferred. So let us first understand what is a mortgage. Mortgage simply means transfer of interest in specific immovable property. And what is this purpose of transfer of interest in specific immovable property? The sole purpose is for securing the payment of money. It's not just securing the payment of money, it also for securing money that is advanced or to be advanced. You have to note the meaning of every word. It is money advanced or to be advanced by way of a loan. It can be an existing or a future debt or performance of an engagement which may give rise to a pecuniary liability. Pecuniary means money liability. So what is the most important aspect of a mortgage? Mortgage means transfer of interest in a specific immovable property for securing payment of money which is to be advanced or actually advanced by way of a loan, an existing or a future debt, or the performance of an engagement which may give rise to a pecuniary liability. So what are the main characteristics of a mortgage? The first and the most important characteristic of a mortgage, it involves transfer of an interest in specific immovable property. Number two, it is basically done with an objective to secure a loan or to ensure performance of an engagement resulting into monetary obligation. Number three, we will see this in different types of mortgage. In some mortgages, the possession of property is also given to the mortgagee by the mortgager. In some mortgages, the possession of the property is retained by the mortgager. So the actual possession of the property need not always be transferred to the mortgagee. So based on the type of mortgage, the possession of the property may be transferred
or may be retained by the mortgagor himself. The next important characteristics of a mortgage is the interest in the mortgage property is reconveyed to the mortgagee on repayment of the amount of the loan with interest thereon. So here again, this is a very important aspect. This charge is specifically created for securing the loan. And if the advance that is made is repaid back, the mortgage property has to be returned back to the borrower. Now, having understood what exactly is a mortgage, what the characteristics of a mortgage, now let us see the different types of mortgages. We can classify mortgages into seven main types, like the simple mortgage, the mortgage by conditional sale, usufructuary mortgage, English mortgage, mortgage by deposit of title deeds or equitable mortgage. This is the most preferred type of mortgage by bankers. The anomalous mortgage and a submortgage. Now let us understand what each one of them means. The first one being a simple mortgage. In a simple mortgage, the mortgagor binds himself to pay the mortgage money, but does not give possession of property, which means the property is retained by the mortgagor. The property should be registered irrespective of the amount of the money involved. So when it comes to registration, it can involve payment of stamp duty and registration charges. The second type of mortgage is mortgage by conditional sale. In this type of mortgage, the mortgagor ostensibly means conditionally, sells the mortgage property. This type of mortgage is generally not preferred by the bankers, because foreclosure is the only remedy for mortgage by conditional sale. The third type of mortgage is the usufructuary mortgage. In usufructuary mortgage, the mortgagor delivers or gives possession or binds to deliver possession of the mortgage. For example, suppose a mango farm is mortgaged. Here, the possession of the mango farm is with the banker. The mortgagee uses the fruits that accrue out of this for the repayment of the loan. So the mortgagee retains possession until the payment of the mortgage money, and the mortgagee is also entitled to receive the rents and profits. Like I said, the fruits in case of a fruit farm. And this right to receive rents and profits is in lieu of the interest or repayment of the mortgage money or both. Let us understand what is an English mortgage. English mortgage has its own peculiarity, because in the English mortgage, the mortgagor binds himself to pay the mortgage money on a certain date. And you have to note very carefully, in this type of mortgage, the mortgagor actually transfers the mortgage property absolutely to the mortgagee. But this transfer is on a condition that the mortgagee will retransfer the property back to the mortgagor upon payment of the entire money. So English mortgage actually involves an absolute transfer, and on repayment of the mortgage money, it is retransferred, the property is retransferred back to the mortgagor. The most popular mortgage that is actually done by the bankers is mortgage by deposit of title deeds, also known as equitable mortgage. Under this mortgage, the person delivers to the creditor or his agent the documents of title to his immovable property with the intention of creating a security for obtaining a loan. So this type of mortgage specifically involves deposit of all the documents, all the title deeds pertaining to the land with the bank that is a lender, so that the borrower will not have a chance to create a new mortgage with any other lender. So all the documents are deposited with the lender, especially in case of an equitable mortgage. An anomalous mortgage has its identity with a mixture of characteristics of all other types of mortgage. So a mortgage, which is not a simple mortgage, a mortgage by conditional sale, a usufructuary mortgage, an English mortgage, or a mortgage by deposit of title deeds is called an anomalous mortgage. So anomalous mortgage may have characteristics of two or more types of mortgages, and hence in the definition itself, it specifically says a mortgage which is neither an English, neither a simple, neither a conditional, neither a usufructuary will be called as an anomalous mortgage. And the final type of mortgage is a sub-mortgage. Here the mortgagee transfers his interest in the mortgage property to create a mortgage of a mortgage. So when we talk of a mortgage of a mortgage, this is specifically done by the mortgagee, in which he transfers his interest in the mortgage property, it would be called as a sub-mortgage. So friends, this is very clear about the different types of mortgage, and based on the policies of the bank, a bank will actually implement the mortgage that is prescribed by its authorities. Now let us understand what are the rights of a mortgager and what are the rights of a mortgagee. First, what are the rights of a mortgager? The first and the foremost right is of right of redemption, that is taking back the property once the amount is or the loan amount is repaid. Second right is right of accession, that is accretion of the mortgage property. We have seen the owner is the mortgager, not the bank, and any accretion, any rise in the value of the property does not belong to the banker, but it always remains with the owner. So the right of accession or accretion of the mortgage property will always remain with the mortgager. Right to inspection and production of documents will always be a right of the mortgager. Now let us see what are the rights of a mortgagee. The first and the foremost right is, especially when the mortgager defaults in making payment of the money. So what can the mortgagee do? A mortgagee will have a right to sue for the mortgage money, and when the mortgagee binds himself to pay, will have a right to sale in case of a simple and equitable mortgage, and foreclosure, that is get a court decree, in case of conditional sale and anomalous mortgage. He'll have right to possession in case of an usufructuary mortgage, because he has a right to receive the rent and profits out of the land. He'll have right in case of renewal of mortgage lease. He'll also have right of recovery of money spent on the mortgage property. So friends, having understood what is a lien, what is a pledge, what is a hypothecation, and now what is a mortgage, now let us understand the next charge that is created on a special type of property, which we call it as actionable claims. And that charge is called as assignment. Assignment is transfer of either a right or a property or a debt, both present or future, and specifically created in case of actionable claims in favor of the bank. So what type of properties can be considered as actionable claims? When we talk about actionable claims can be a book debt, actionable claim can be money due from government or the semi-government organization, and actionable claims, the most simple example can be a insurance policy. So when it comes to borrowing against book debts, when it comes to borrowings against the money from government or semi-government organizations, when it comes to borrow money against insurance policies, the charge that is created by the banker is an assignment. And as we saw in the previous slide, assignment is transfer of three specific things, that is right, property or debt, and this transfer is specifically done in cases of these types of actionable claims. There are basically two types of assignments. The first one is the legal assignment and the second one is an equitable assignment. Let us understand what each one of these means. A legal assignment involves an absolute transfer of an actionable claim, and his actual transfer comes in the form of writing and signing by the assigner, whereas an equitable assignment simply means which is not following the conditions for legal, that specifically means the assignee cannot sue in his own name. So these are the two main types of assignment. Now we see some other types of charges that are created which can give some rights, which can also dilute some rights. The first among them is the first charge and the second charge. What do you mean by first charge? On default, the bank can seize and sell the assets of the borrower, especially in case of winding up. The bank would be able to possess the asset and sell it and realize its dues. This is first charge. A secured creditor, a priority bank gets, whereas in case of a second charge, the bank is entitled to the asset only after the claim of the holder of the first or prior charge. So in case the banker has to create, banker will always favor creation of first charge in its favor, because in case of winding up, the bank would be able to possess the asset and sell it and realize the dues, the bank will get priority. Next two important types of charges are pari passu charge and floating charge. What do you mean by a pari passu charge? A pari passu means equal. The claim on the assets that are hypothecated are equal. So the distribution happens based on the amount that is lent, the value that is secured, and the floating charge. Bank does not have a specific charge on any asset, but has a claim on all the assets of the company. After the claims of those who have a prior claim is satisfied, a floating charge will be inferior to a first, second and pari passu charge on specific assets, simply because in case of a floating charge, bank does not have a specific charge on the asset, but has a claim on all the assets of a company after the claims of those who have a prior claim satisfied. And finally, we look at a trust receipt. A trust receipt has its own significance. A trust receipt is a document executed by a customer stating that he holds the goods in trust for the bank for the loan advanced. The customer would agree to keep the goods separate from his other goods. We have seen whenever the borrower has to deal with the goods, wherever the borrower has to make a process on the goods, the banker cannot keep the goods with him. The goods needs to be kept with the borrower. Only then he can make some process on it. Only then he can earn some revenue out of it. And only then he can repay the loan out of it. But whenever such things, such goods are kept, he has to sign a trust receipt in favor of the banker. Whenever the goods are sold, the bank would be paid to reduce the customer's indebtedness. That is the basic objective of the trust receipt. So friends, now let us summarize what exactly factors are to be kept in mind while creating a charge. What factors generally bank keep in mind while creating a charge to secure the advances? The factors to check before creation of charge are ready conversion. The property should be liquidated so that the banker can recover its money. It should have no encumbrances. It should be solely owned by the borrower. It should have a stable price. Only then the value of the advance, which keeps on rising because of the interest, would be recoverable. It should have safety or security. It should not be perishable. It should not have diminution in value. The return or yield of security should be increasing, should not be decreasing. There should be an adequate margin. If borrower defaults, the cushion to recover the money to some extent. Value by qualified assessor. Value should not be what the borrower says. A value should be assessed by some expert so that a banker can believe and rely on it. The margin will take care when the borrower defaults, so the banker never ever lends 100% to cover the cushion, keep the cushion as a margin, and various other aspects like it should be easily transferable, it should have a right title, it should have ease of selling, and the quality should be good, not when the loan is advanced, but always, and so many other factors based on specific circumstances and the cases the bank deals while lending it to its borrowers. Thank you.